Welcome to the Mel Hammer Podcast, episode 84. I'm Mel. I'm here with Earl and Al.
This is confusing. I'm Al.
I fucked it.
You're Mel.
I fucked
this
it.
This is Al.
I'm Mel. You're Al. You're Al. The people that are listening can't see me pointing to you as I say that, so whatever. You know who we are. Loads going on this week in the world of heavy metal and all that. We had our future conference this week, which was quite cool.
So Future is the company that we work for, we should probably say.
Yes, yeah, so basically Future is the company we work for, one of the biggest media brands in the world and all that business. They've got about, I actually tried to count it earlier, I think it's about 132 different brands under their wings. they've got them all listed on the website. It was easy. I can do maths. So yeah, and at the end of the conference, they always have their annual awards, and we were really honoured to win the Magazine of the Year awards, which is fucking awesome. So as I say, there's a lot of different magazines under the Future stable, some really awesome magazines as well, some very, very big ones out there, it has to be said, some more kind of mainstream centred magazines under the Future brand. And so for a magazine like Metal Hammer to win Mag of the Year means a hell of a lot. And obviously, this is all coming only a couple of years or so after Metal Hammer very nearly didn't exist at all. So just wanted to take the chance to thank everybody for supporting us over the, not just the last few years, but over all the years we've been around. Yeah, we were delighted to win and we really appreciate it. So good times, everybody. Good times.
Yeah, yeah. It was a lot of fun.
You sure made it sound it.
No. How did that not sound sincere? It was really nice. Like Merlin, you just said that the fact that there's so many different brands and they chose to, you know, go for Metal Hammer, and it's cool.
It is. It's wicked. It's been a.
We got to talk about metal to a lot of people who didn't know what
we
it was.
We did. I should say massive shout out to Elle actually, because we've done a lot of exciting stuff this year. Future asked us to do some presentations and things like that in front of what was a very big hall of about 700 people, and Elle did a big thing on one of our pieces we did on Rammstein Online this year, where we got a professor from Oxford to basically explain the Deutschland video. And Elle managed to get a big segment of the Deutschland video played across a conference to a bunch of very bemused people, which was great. So cheers for doing that.
You are welcome. It's always good to spread the metal gospel.
It was cool. Yeah. So yeah, very, very cool week. And testament to what's been a great year at Metal Hammer. And we're only just getting fucking started. So stick around, ladies and gentlemen. On that note, you do only have one more week to buy our Baby Metal issue in the shops in the UK. It is a world exclusive interview with the band and their very cool and interesting manager, Cobra Metal. About the next chapter, the new album, the lineup changes, all the stuff you wanted to know. And we've got like literally, I think, a couple of bundles left online as well. Those come with the extra exclusive hand numbered art prints, which is very, very cool and sparkly and lovely. So go to tinyurl.com/buyhammer to pick up that bundle. And as I said, you've only got about a week more to buy the Baby Metal issue in UK shops. So there. We've been really fucking busy since the last podcast.
Yeah, we've been all over the place. Like, all of us did different gigs. What have you been to?
Yeah.
I actually can't remember what you've
been
doing.
I'll go first. Oh, that reminds me. I've got my notes. Yes. I took notes because I knew I was going to be talking about it.
You got prepared.
I know. I did proper journalism and everything. So last week I went to see Volbeat at the Brixton Academy. Very, very, very sold out Brixton Academy, I should say. It was fucking packed in there. I watched some of the gig from upstairs on the balcony, watched some of it from downstairs as well, and it was very hard to get in either area whatsoever. Now, I don't know what you guys think of Volbeat. Well, I kind of know what Elle thinks. We talked about it a little bit. I wouldn't call myself the biggest fan in the world. I've seen them at festivals. I've never seen them at their own gig. They're one of those bands where I feel like when someone writes down the ingredients, I'm like, this looks great. It makes sense to me. But I've never quite clicked with them as much. But they have some great support bands, which we'll get to in a minute. So I thought I'd go along and have a good old nosy around anyway.
The weird thing is, though, before I started working here, I thought you were a big fan, because I'm sure a few years back there was a very big kind of drive from the Hammer direction of like, we all love Volbeat, which obviously some people here do love Volbeat, but I specifically thought that it was like a big thing that you were in love with. So
nope.
I was quite surprised.
No, I mean, Metal Hammer, we are very, you know, as a, I guess, as a brand, but you know, as a group and as a, you know, across all the different people that write for Hammer and in terms of what Volbeat represent, we're well behind them. I think it's always great when you get genuine, honest metal and rock bands doing well, and they've done amazingly. You know, they've just toured their asses off, kind of risen up through the ranks of the scene, and now they're one of the biggest European hard rock heavy metal bands of the 21st century. Like, it's just, that's just facts, that's what they are. So that's great, and I think it's, they're doing great things, and it's great they're around, but I've never like clicked with them in quite the right way on record. But I went to see him, and I got there just as Danko Jones was finishing off their second to last song, I think. So if you haven't heard of Danko Jones, just a really kick-ass rock and roll band, exactly the kind of band that you can see Volbeat fans really getting into. And yeah, people seem to be really into it. But like, I find it hard to believe anyone could watch a Danko Jones set and not think they are just tops. And that is pretty much what Brixton seemed to think of them. So that went down really well. I should say as well, literally one of the most varied crowds I've ever seen at a rock show. It was like everyone from proper diehard metal heads in like battle jackets to like rockabilly people who had obviously spent ages jetting their quiffs up.
Oh, yeah,
to like,
yeah.
You know, all ages, all types of fans, people that are, you know, not to be snobby, but I got the sense didn't go to very many rock gigs, and people that are obviously more hardened regulars. They were all in there, so Volbeat are obviously appealing to a massive spread of people, which is always a really good thing to see, I think. And I was very interested to see how Baroness would do, because unlike Danko Jones, who are more just kind of like, we're a rock and roll band, we play rock and roll, if you're a Volbeat fan, that's probably what you're here for, you're going to like it. Baroness are a much more kind of layered and nuanced and just kind of, no pun intended because of the colour albums, but there's a lot of different shades to that band. And I kind of feel like people took a little bit of time to click in with them at first. And they've been doing what they've been doing for the last few years. So like the lights were color coded to the songs off the albums, and you know, they were, sometimes Baroness can be maybe a little bit static, but they're really giving it some. Gina, is it?
Yeah, Gina.
Yeah, Gina was like headbanging away, and John was really like animated and kind of really giving it some as well, like really kind of...
There's a lot of warmth in that band.
Yeah, totally. Warmth is the exact word I'd use to describe them. And I mean, to me, I thought they were fantastic. I think they totally deserve to headline Brixton, if I'm honest. I think even though a lot of people know who Baroness are and they're very beloved in the metal scene, I think they should be bigger than they are. I think they should be one of the bigger bands in the world at the moment, because they're just so fucking relentlessly good. And they went down well, but I would say they're definitely not as instantly accessible or as easy to kind of get as Danko Jones are. So even though I think Baroness are wonderful and were great, I'm not certain that they would have won over significantly more fans than Danko Jones would have just from being Danko Jones playing rock and roll.
Yeah.
And that's not a disservice to Danko Jones, because they do it really well.
It's just the genre, but, isn't it, at the end of the day?
Yeah,
it's
totally.
What those fans were there for.
Yeah, exactly. I think if you're into Volbeat, you're in there for a good time and, you know, big riffs, big grooves, catchy songs. And Baroness has a lot of that, but it's a bit more, like I said, it's a bit more layered, and a lot of the time it's a bit more melancholic, and it's just a slightly different pace. And I'm not sure, you know, they didn't go down badly, but I'm not sure it quite clicked with people in... the most obvious way, but they certainly got, like, you know, lots of rounds of applause, and people seem to appreciate what they were doing anyway, which is good. So yeah, Volbeat came on, they had a really, really good light show. They had this cool, like, raised platform which had a screen like across it, so that was quite a cool way of doing it things.
That's
a bit differently.
What, like a platform with a, I see what you mean,
like,
yeah,
almost,
so
like
the
stage was like two stories,
yeah,
almost,
yeah,
and then the screen was across the kind of
the middle bit.
Yeah, like the vertical,
yeah,
bit of it.
A horizontal bit of it,
no, because it was going, well, yeah, I guess, yeah, but I was thinking of it like a dimension, yeah, anyway, you know what I mean, like the front of that platform,
yeah,
as you look at it,
so
not
it was
the top,
like a line across,
yeah, exactly, yeah, yeah.
Horizontal line,
totally. I do journalism, but yeah, it was yeah, so this, it was a pretty cool stage show. It wasn't anything spectacular, but it was just enough to look a little bit flashy and all that kind of stuff. And oh man, the first thing I thought was that people just absolutely love this band. People were just singing their absolute asses off from the second they came on. And you could tell some of the songs were bigger than other songs and all the rest of it, which is fine. But like every song seemed to get a really good reaction. People just dancing their asses off as well, like really like boogieing. I don't even know how else to say it.
Yeah, but that's literally like what they do. Like Volbeat are like the boogie band, aren't they?
Totally, totally.
What's the thing in Let's Boogie? Steal the deal and let's boogie.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, like I said, I've seen them at festivals before, so I'm used to seeing them in front of people that, you know, festival crowds are perfect for them. They just want to have a good time. But seeing them in front of a home crowd, as it were, like they would, people just create, like they were so passionate for it. They really were like just stopping short of emotionally singing along to some of the big lines in it sometimes. So that was really cool. It was an amazing atmosphere in there. Interestingly, Michael Paulson, the singer, kept on saying that his voice wasn't great and he needed some help. I thought he sounded all right. I didn't really notice any problems with it, but I did see that Volbeat had to pull one of their dates this week. So it's obviously caught up with him, which is a shame. But I thought he sounded all right. And then almost kind of confirming what I was saying about Danko Jones being more on brand with Volbeat. Danko Jones is the singer as well as the band, as it were. It's kind of named after him. And Danko himself came out for a track. He did Black Rose with them, which went down really well. And, you know, it just kind of, again, I think people would come away from that remembering Danko Jones because he's just so on the right level for Volbeat fans. So that was quite interesting. And yeah, as I said, it was a really mixed crowd, like metalheads, old rock dads, like Geordie Shore lad looking types, bikers, young, old men, women, like it was just everybody.
It sort of reminds me of the Clutch audience, actually, because I saw Clutch at Brixton last year in December. And apart from the rockabillies with the quiffs, it sounds like a really sort of similar type of audience. The fact that you get a cross section of people who just want to go there to have a good time. It's literally, I mean, gigs should be about having fun anyway, but you're literally like going for a night out to just like have a dance and a sing and definitely enjoy it.
It was cool. Like, and again, I didn't leave thinking like, Volbeat the most dynamic and brilliant band in the world, but they're not supposed to be. They are there to just write fun, swinging rock and roll songs. And some things that do really come across live as well. Like there's things like you can, I don't know if I've ever seen a person that so clearly wears his influences on his sleeve like Michael does. Like he's got the James Hetfield kind of guitar tone and swagger. He's got the kind of Johnny Cash kind of outlaw vibe about him. There's a tiny bit of Elvis in there as well, and some of the vocal like points and the way he like shakes his hips about and stuff. There's all these little bits that just so clearly have produced this like guy who is now fronting a very successful rock band. And yeah, it was just a really fun, brilliant gig, which I'm sure everyone that listens to Volbeat, that is listening to this, is kind of going, yeah, duh. That's what they do.
Exactly. I was just thinking that. I was thinking, why are you Volbeat splaining?
Yeah, exactly.
Literally Volbeat splaining. Anyway, like, that's what you're doing.
As someone who's not been the biggest fan, I did still come away with a big shit-eating grin. And, you know, as always, if nothing else, I'm always excited when bands do well. And Volbeat are doing really well. And I'm really interested to see. They're a band where I don't know what the glass ceiling is. Yeah, because they're not exciting in the same way a band like, you know, Ghost is, in terms of having all these weird ideas going on and this hype around them. They've just kind of like got their heads down, toured loads, put out good albums, and now they're headlining academies here, and they headline massive venues in Europe. So I'm interested to see where they could end up in like 5 years from now.
Yeah, it kind of just feels like they could just go and go.
Yeah, like, that's what, know, I mean. They keep like, they could, are we going to turn around and be like, fucking hell, I'll be a headline in Wembley in 2 years?
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. They could have that in them.
It wouldn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, why not? Why not, eh? So that was what I was doing. What were you guys doing?
I went to see Cult of the Sun and Ice Nine Kills at the Islington Academy last Friday.
Yes, you did.
I did.
So Ice Nine Kills have been around the blocks a little bit, but Cult of the Sun, interesting. Do you want to explain what they're about?
From the beginning?
Yeah, I think so, because a lot of people won't know who they are.
Cult of the Sun, I should say as well, Cult is spelt with a V, Of is spelt with a V, and Sun is spelt with a V. So if you're looking for them, replace all the F's with V's, first of all, in the proper cult way.
And use.
Oh, yeah. what did I say?
You said replace all the V's.
Oh, yeah.
No, so you said replace all the F's.
Oh, yeah. The U's and the F's. Yeah. Alphabet fail. So, Cult of the Sun is basically, as I understand it, a Finnish singer-songwriter. And it's what do you call it when it's one person project? Like a Mirka type thing?
One man.
Yeah.
Band.
So one, yeah. It's like a.
That's how I always describe Merca. She's a one-man band.
One woman. But yeah, that's basically what it is. Yeah, it's his project, basically, this guy, and he has written a bunch of songs which he describes as occult murder pop. And we had a video that we watched in the office for a song called The Pit, and in it he was wearing this really weird kind of white mask, and we were all kind of watching it going, I don't really know what this is. Like, is it meant to be some kind of joke? Is it meant to be some kind of, like, weird cult thing? Like, is it referencing something? And we were just like, we didn't really know what it was. And I kind of, not knowing a lot about him / them, I kind of turned up at the gig thinking maybe he would be wearing the mask. But he wasn't. He had kind of a hooded cowl type thing over his head instead.
Cowl. We were trying to think of the word earlier.
Yeah.
It's that's like, what
did
it
you
is.
Say it was?
I didn't know. I just said that thing that Sharon Donato wears.
Yeah, I think it's a cowl, isn't it?
Yeah. Let's go with cowl.
Yeah. I mean, snood doesn't sound good, does it?
No, it doesn't.
Pretty sure it was a cowl. And he had this really cool thing going on where he was kind of singing and wearing this cowl and sort of quite close into the microphone. And the music, although he describes it as a cult murder pop, it's basically very similar to him. It's kind of like an 80s, sort of an 80s goth vibe crossed with pop music. And he sings a lot about Lucifer and the Morning Star. So it's kind of this, you know, satanic slant to it. And he was really good. Like, he seemed very comfortable on stage. And talking to him afterwards, he said he was in bands before that previously won Grammys. I'm guessing Finnish Grammys, but I haven't looked it up because I'm a terrible human being.
Interesting.
And so, you know, you could tell by watching him that he was really knew what he was doing, was very comfortable on stage. But the other guys in the band, there wasn't a huge atmosphere to what they were doing, and I think it's probably because they are essentially hired hands.
Right.
So they weren't really moving about a lot. They didn't really have any kind of... they weren't projecting any personality. There wasn't a huge kind of vibe about it. But I actually really enjoyed it. And it was their first ever gig as well, which is crazy.
Wow.
You could definitely tell it wasn't his, like I said, but as a band, it was their first gig. So if they were a bit static, if there wasn't a lot of movement, if it wasn't quite there yet, they did a really good job for the fact it was their first show.
How did Ice Nine Kills crowd react to them? Because Ice Nine Kills, to me, from where I've seen them, I kind of feel like they've got quite a young fan base, and you know, they've got that kind of shiny modern metal vibe. Whereas this guy, the reference points you're talking about, speak to a totally different audience, to me anyway.
Everyone was very respectful, actually. Nobody really seemed to be kind of... There was a bit of talk. I was at the back. There was a bit of talking through some of it, as you kind of get sometimes at the back of a venue. People were quite respectful towards it. People seemed to be kind of... The way that the performance was, it kind of lends itself to... I'm trying to think of the right words. Not a quiet focus, but it's just kind of the sort of music that is quite relaxing when you listen to it / watch it, and you're sort of quite content just to watch it and be absorbed by it. And I think that was kind of what people were doing. They were quite
quietly
content
intense.
Kind of, yeah, quite content to just kind of go, this is something a bit different. What is it? It's kind of chill. It's like a bit poppy, but there's also something going on with the aesthetic. And everyone seemed quite respectful of it and quite kind of just happy to watch it, to be honest. It was cool as well. They haven't got a ton of songs they've released yet. They've had like an EP with 4 songs in it. But they did a cover of Guns N' Roses' You Could Be Mine. Ooh. No, and it was actually good.
Really?
Merlin's face is like a big face.
He's a kind of goth pop version of You Could Be Mine of my favourite Guns N' Roses song is not something that I would want to hear personally.
It was genuinely good because it was one of those things where they start playing and you're like, why does this sound familiar? And then you're like, oh, I already know this song. But yeah, it sounded like 80s. I was into it, gotta say.
Fair enough. Yeah, I'll reserve judgment until I can see it myself.
I had a chat with him afterwards and he said that he was living in a really nice house and like doing well, and he gave up basically a life of comfortableness. That's not a word.
Comfort.
A comfortable life. He sort of gave up those trappings to focus on his music full time and to be an artist. So he's kind of throwing himself at this and seeing what happens, which, you know,
got fair enough.
Respect for that, really.
That's really interesting. Yeah. I also happen to know, just briefly, that Hammer's own Ali Cooper was at the gig as well and may have also talked to him for a little piece we might have coming up with Mr. Sun in the coming weeks. So watch out for a future issue of Metal Hammer for that.
Yeah, we had a little chat about that. He said he was into Hammer and that was really nice and that he'd enjoyed the chat. So I'm sure that will be good. And yeah, I was quite into the whole thing. I really want to hear some more. He said he's got a few years of music already built up and stuff, so I'm guessing he has a plan and he will enact that plan.
How were Ice Nine Kills then? Kind of horror, like polished horror metalcore, aren't they, I guess?
Yeah.
Kind of Panic at the Disco-y bits in.
Basically that. So we've spoken a bit about them before. They're from Boston. Like you said, they're very kind of shiny. Their last album was called The Silver Scream, and the songs were based on different horror movies. So it was, you absolutely could not fault their show. Like, you could not fault it. It was a Friday night. They came on and they had their backdrop with them that looked like a cinema hoarding. What's the outside of a cinema called where it has like a board that tells you the film?
I don't actually
it's
know.
One of
the
those.
Sign.
Had
the
a big
board.
Yeah, had a big cinema board. And, you know, a couple of ego risers at the front. So he kind of barreled out looking like Freddy Krueger and sort of got up and got the crowd whipped up. And, you know, they just ran through. Well, that was The American Nightmare, the really, really poppy kind of hit you might have heard. And they just kind of ran through a bunch of songs, kind of really, really fast, energetic. He's kept switching props for different horror songs. So he'd have like a chainsaw or whatever kind of went with that. They had an It balloon on stage with their logo on it, which was a really nice touch.
That's cool.
That was on stage before they came on. Actually, yeah, I should say before they came on, they had a load of like horror music stuff that they were playing to kind of set the scene.
I've got to say, I really like what these guys do. I'm not massively into it on a musical level, but like the
mean,
little
like,
touches of horror stuff, I'm just so into, man. They really believe in their craft.
It was absolutely faultless, the fact that they really committed to this. So you're standing there waiting for them to come on, you'd have all this horror music and stuff people can recognise. Then just on the stage, you have the, you know, the one red balloon just by itself, and then you've got the cinema backdrop and Friday night. And it really did kind of feel like you were going to a show. It was very theatrical. It was like going to the, you know, the theatre or the movies, and you really kind of were anticipating what was going to happen. It was genuinely like a treat, I'm going to say. It was like a horror-y treat.
Interesting.
Yeah, so that I thought that was really, really cool. And yeah, they came on, and again, it was flawless. You couldn't fault them. It was so slick and so well done and so fun as well. Like, it's not po-faced. If you're running around with like a fake chainsaw or Freddy Krueger lady fingers, I don't know what they're called. You can't like...
Glove.
I don't know. You should know what they're called.
It's just a knife glove. It's not got an official name, I don't think.
I don't know. I feel like it should have a special name.
Lovey McGloverson.
Yeah. If you're doing that, you can't be po-faced about it. You just want it. You want everyone to have a good time. And they're really entertaining, and the audience was really into it. It was definitely sort of that crossover point between horror and metal. Everyone had like lots of tattoos, coloured hair, and it was, well, you know, just metal audience, really. But it did also feel like a metal show where the metal audience are like the metal freaks, and I say that in an affectionate way, and I say that in saying that I am also a freak into metal. But it's like, you know, if you watch Avatar, or like, you know, in a certain time period watching Korn, or, you know, there's a place where you go and you know that you can like express your personality, and it's gonna, you're really gonna feel at home there, and you're gonna feel like the band are on your side and you can hang out with your friends and all the rest.
That's
of
cool.
It. So that was really nice. It just felt like everybody was kind of on the same page. And so I saw someone with the band logo tattooed on their hand as well. Someone else dressed like they'd come out of The Crow with the Brandon face paint. But yeah, I'm kind of with you. Like, I wouldn't say it was my kind of music because they're on Fearless Records, and it's kind of that... you could say shiny metalcore, or you could say like some of it's pop punk and emo. Like, you know, kind of early 2000s emo thing going on there. You know, if you strip away a lot of the horror trappings, you do get to kind of the more emo-y, punky, pop punky, metallic hardcore occasionally / metalcore sound. So, you know, if you're just into like old school metal like Saxon or Priest or whatever, it's not going to be for you. But if you like horror movies and you like kind of the more modern metalcore / 2000s, you know, type nostalgic fearless records thing, then you're going to have a lovely time.
Fair.
But like I said, for what they do, absolutely, you could not fault it.
Alice, you did something this week as well, didn't you?
I went and had wine with Gal.
Oh, fuck then... yeah!
This that is quite good, actually. Actually, yeah. I've just talked about, like, you know, this is probably a bit pop punky for a lot of people who are listening to this. You know, unless you like it horror, in which case you're full force. But Gal, that's like completely the other end of the spectrum.
I forgot, because I've literally got on the podcast notes, Alice went to ? I couldn't remember what it was. So yeah. Can you explain exactly what this was?
So, Gal, who is ex Gorgoroth black metal legend, hosted a couple of years ago. He hosted one as well, which is the first time he hosted one. A wine tasting, because he's known for his love of wine. He only ever drinks wine. I think preference of red wine, because he's black metal
and because it's like blood.
Obviously,
yeah. And so it was all natural wines. He'd selected six. He told us that we were like, oh, so, you know, what made you decide on these ones? And he was like, well, they gave me a budget as well. So so it wasn't like right. The best ones that he could have selected, but it was within the price range. And they were all completely natural, like organic wines, like raw wine in a way, like not as heavily processed, not with sulfates and stuff.
You a wine person? This
I
might
love
be important.
Wine, yeah.
Okay. So did you feel like you was it good?
It was really
I would have
yeah.
no idea what I was doing if that was me.
There were some really strange ones as well. There was one that was kind of like really savory, and it had this like weird cheesiness to it. I found like it was cheese. But
do you remember,
like,
what it was called?
No, I can't. I've got the sheet, but I didn't bring it in today. I've got the little card that he gave out.
Oh, cool.
I'd taken a photo of it actually on my phone.
Was it? Did you have tasting notes, or did you write down what you
were
tasting?
It like said about each sort of thing that we were trying. There was like a big sheet. They weren't in the right order though, as they were on the sheet, which was weird. But yeah, it was, let me see if I can find it. Yeah. So there's like a sheet, and you get like the sheet with Gal's words, I guess it says, natural wine with Christian Espedal. And then it's got like six different wines, three of which were red and three of which were white. And then, so there was one that had a really cool bottle that had like a sort of Ouroboros sort of...
A snake!
Yeah. That was really cool. I think that one was my favourite one, actually. And
what
it
kind
was,
of flavor was it?
It was a red one. It was just nice and red and not too sweet. And
that's what I would say about red wine. That's terrible.
I don't remember.
If someone asked me to describe any red wine, I'd be like, it's nice and red.
Some of them are really vinegary, though, and it was none of these were
vinegary. Oh, yeah, I can't be doing with that.
There was the cheesy white one. There was also one that was white that really tasted like cider to me, really strangely.
It sounds like
cider.
It's gone off.
No, it was like, a proper, like, proper still cider. Like
apple-y?
No, it was like, have you ever had, like, scrumpy?
Yeah.
It's like that. It was like a really strong, scrumpy cider, wow. Except that it was a wine. So that was weird. None of them had, they weren't, like, it wasn't made with apples or anything. It must have just been what it was, like, what barrel it was put in or whatever. Because one had loads of lime in it. That was the one that I thought smelt cheesy.
Should I send this to my friend who's doing the Masters of Wine course and see what she says about the wines?
Yeah, go on. They're all completely natural, nice and like local and stuff, and they're like, you could see that from their labels, because they kind of had, some of them had quite like, I don't know what the word is, but sort of like hand-drawn, sort of like very kind of and I don't want to say like unprofessional, but it's kind of like really...
It was fucking amateur hour. That's what you're saying. Rubbish.
But like the labels were like, yeah, kind of, but that was cool because it was small amounts of the wine. And
DIY, isn't it?
Yeah.
Basically.
Which was really cool.
So was this... So you all... Because it was at the Black Heart, right? In London.
Yes.
Yeah, so people outside London, that's like a you know, quite well-known, I guess, metal pub, really, that's got a small gig venue on top. So is this literally like a room full of people all sitting around while what girls on the microphone talking about wine? Or
no, like
you're all just in
it
there
was
boozing.
Just in the corner. It was in the corner in the booths. They just cornered it off. And he just was bringing out wines. Like, he was serving us the wines. It was like he was, a little waiter. And he was like, have you had this wine? Have you had this wine?
That is quality.
So he was giving us the wines. And he'd just go from table to table to and just, like, chat about the wine. And that was it, really. It was
what
just like...
What was it in aid of? Does he, just because he enjoys it and he wanted to, like, hang
so
out?
So he was over here because I was also going to Lindy Faye Heller, who is upstairs, playing upstairs.
Oh, nice. Yes. This is someone from Hai Lung, right?
Wardruna.
Oh, yes. Fuck. Oh, I got my weird Antley bands mixed up. Yeah, so she's from Wardruna. So what was that like?
So, like, Gal was in Wardruna as well.
Yes, of course.
So he does, like, backing vocals on her solo album. So he was over with her. She had support, which I caught the end of after the wine tasting, which was a sort of, I think, British lady who does kind of folky stuff in old French.
Okay.
Everyone seemed to like that. I didn't like her accent very much, like the way that she sang. Like, there was nothing actually wrong. It was complete taste thing. Like, I just didn't really take to her.
Mm.
It was kind of like, I got that she was hitting the notes and everything, but it just wasn't, her voice just wasn't my cup of tea.
Okay.
I suppose. And then Lindy Faye Heller was on next, and she does, well, I don't really have to describe her solo stuff. Obviously, she's in Wardruna, which is a lot of very, like, Nordic, folky, historical
percussive,
stuff.
Soul-y kind of
stuff. And she's, like, a phenomenal singer. She's really, 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 really high-pitched, but she's, like, really just amazing. Like, she doesn't need any production or anything on her vocals. She just hits everything perfectly. She's like a little fairy or something, like a little pixie that's just like, just, I don't know, she's kind of magical. Like, she's just kind of like a little pixie, and she just hits everything perfectly. So she's just like, wow. And yeah, I can't really describe her solo stuff. It's got this sort of folk elements to it, and some of the drumming and like loads of harmonies. So it's got like elements of folk, but there's also a slight sort of, I don't know, more.
What are you doing?
She's showing me what natural crap wine, apparently.
I texted a friend who knows about wine, and I said, do you know any of these wines? And they said, no, it looks like natural crap, which is usually garbage.
Wow.
That's somebody who doesn't like natural wine.
Girl's just been, wine career just ended live on the Metal Hammer podcast.
You can tell your friend that the natural wines don't have sulfates in them, so you don't get a hangover. So,
is that true?
Yeah, honestly. Honestly.
What? There is wine out there you can drink that doesn't give you a hangover.
Doesn't, like, I'm pretty good with drinking a lot of wine anyway, but you can tell when you've had like a crappy wine and all the sulfates.
A banging red wine hangover is awful.
Oh, like your head is just like, oh, when you can get away with drinking a lot more of that because it's just kind of pure.
Yeah, take that, expert.
Yeah.
I'm doing the thing with my fingers as I say that. So it sounds like you had a lovely evening, basically, or a very
civilized.
Unique evening.
Yes, it was very unique, and I definitely recommend doing a wine tasting with Gal. He's a very nice fellow.
If he's around your local anytime soon.
Yeah, and I'd also recommend Lindy Faye Heller, and I'd check out her solo album because it's really, really cool. It's not metal, but it's really cool, and awesome. She's got a phenomenal voice.
Did you go to Lingua Ignota as well?
No.
Oh, you didn't go to that? Okay. A few people from them that went straight from the Future Conference to Lingua Ignota. Yes. By the way, if you haven't checked out the Lingua Ignota album, I'm not even going to try and describe it. Just go and listen to it because it's one of the most difficult and painful and chaotic and emotionally raw albums I've probably ever heard in all the best ways. It's fucking horrible to listen to, but it is amazing also. And she played London this week and I heard it was pretty intense. Right, let's look at all the news from the world of metal this week. Shit news to start off with, actually. James Hetfield has gone back to rehab. Metallica revealed this earlier on this week. I think over the weekend, actually, they revealed it on Instagram and across their socials, which means Metallica had to postpone their Australian tour, which also it was supported by Slipknot. So Slipknot have also released a statement saying that they're going to work out what they do next. But yeah, it goes without saying, really. If nothing else, it's good to know that Papa Het's seen that he needs to go back and get some help again, and hopefully he'll be going through that process and back on his feet, and Metallica will be able to pick up where they left off very soon, I think. Just about covers it, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's it really. There's, I think everyone's just really behind him. Everyone's really willing him to get the help he needs. And
I've seen some really hot, wonderful, heartfelt messages from around the metal scene, actually. Tony Iommi put out a really nice message earlier today. And Randy Blythe posted a really inspirational thing on social media, actually, about how influential James was in Randy finding his sobriety and stuff. So
yeah, there's a lot of support coming out there. So I think they both said that.
Jamie did.
Yeah, pretty sure he said as well that, as well as Randy, that James had been helpful in him, you know, finding sobriety as well.
That's awesome. So yeah, there's a lot of support out there for James, and we're all pulling for him, so hopefully we'll see him out and back to himself very soon. In very exciting news, I think I might let Elle take this one because she's probably the most stoked out of everybody.
Devin Townsend is headlining Bloodstock.
Yeah.
And he's going to be playing a special one-off set featuring everything from Strapping Young Lad material to songs from Empath.
That is fucking cool.
Yeah, it's really
embracing the Strapping Young Lad stuff again. Yeah. I think that's what a lot of people are excited about. Maybe because it's Bloodstock, so you got to bring the heavy.
Yeah, you got to bring the heavy. And Strapping Young Lad, everyone has been wanting to hear those songs for a long time now, because Devin's obviously gone off and done a bunch of other awesome, awesome stuff, which he wouldn't have done if he'd stayed on the Strapping Young Lad trajectory. But there's so much love for those songs, and they're so heavy and they're so good.
It's, I think it's such a cool booking by Bloodstock, because Devin's around a lot. He there was a period of about 5 or 6 years where he was hugely prolific, and I think it's easy to take him for granted. But I think getting to see him do actual, not just a headline set, but a headline set at Bloodstock, where it feels a bit different from a lot of the bands you would normally assume with headline Bloodstock. He's a bit out there and a bit circling around slightly different spheres musically, especially with what he's doing with the prog crowd nowadays and all the rest of it. And he's, as he said, he's playing a special set, so it's going to feel like an event. And yeah, he's just one of those, he's like, Devin Townsend is one of those kind of like the people's band type people, do you know what I mean? Like everyone loves him, everyone's behind him, and I just think it should be really fascinating to see what he does.
He's really good at bringing shows as well.
We've totally
seen the Retinal Circus and the 4 shows that he did to promote that collection of records with Devin Townsend projects, and
Key and Addicted and all those ones.
Key, Addicted, Ghost, what was the 4th one? I don't remember. Help. Why?
Deconstructed.
Yeah,
that,
no.
Or was that a different one? He's done so much stuff. Because he could pull stuff from what was the Casualties of Cool? He could pull stuff from that as well if he wanted. Yeah. He's just done so much stuff, and most of it has been fucking great as well. There's probably not many people in the world that have as much of a tough time picking set lists out as Devin Townsend must do. So trying to pick something that's going to be Bloodstock friendly is going to be awesome. And as we said, more Strapping Young Lad stuff will make it into the set, so that's good.
You made me look up the albums now because I feel so ashamed that I've forgotten.
Well, it's all right. He's had a lot of ones out there, hasn't he? And you love Empath, don't you, Al? That's like the bit, that's almost like his kitchen sink album in a way, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm still picking through that, to be honest. It's just mad. Yeah, there we go. It was Ghost, Deconstruction, Addicted and Key.
Nice.
There were the 4.
Ghost. Yeah, it was Deconstruction. Cool. Hooray, I was right. Bloodstock's shaping up very nicely indeed. Already also confirmed Violence, Skindred, Gloryhammer, Sacred Reich. Some of these might have been added more recently. Ginger. So excited to see what they bring to Bloodstock, because they are really one of the most hyped bands in the metal scene right now. A lot of people are very excited about that band. Butcher Babies as well. And fucking Black Dahlia Murder and Dark Tranquillity, 2 of the best death metal bands ever. So that's cool. Bloodstock's going to be awesome. 6th to the 9th of August 2020. I can't believe those words are coming out of my mouth, but that's when it is. It's going to be very, very good. In exclusive news, we have an exclusive snippet from a world-exclusive new interview with Evanescence's Amy Lee, and with Temptations' Sharon Dylan Ardell together. For the first and only time ever, we've interviewed them both together at the exact same time. And you can see an exclusive snippet from that interview over at metalhammer.com right now. The two bands are, of course, going on tour for the first time ever next year. But the two singers are telling us about the first time they ever met. So go on to metalhammer.com now to check out that world exclusive interview. And we'll have a lot more from that world exclusive interview very soon. It is massive and you're going to want to read it, possibly when the next issue of Metal Hammer hits shelves around about Thursday next week. You're going to want to check that out. Trust me, it's big stuff. So there. Should we do some read requests, Johns?
Yeah.
Facebook.com/Metal Hammer readers if you want to come and hang out with us. And you should, I was saying earlier, there's 2,700 of you on that Facebook page now. It's a lot of people to talk to and get good feedback from and hang out with. So we appreciate it.
I also noticed that somebody told on me and Alice and when you're away and we were doing the podcast by ourselves.
Oh, you're fucking around with crystals and stuff.
Yeah. Someone told on us, Alice, and said that we were talking about crystals.
What? Told us.
I was outraged. Outraged. The fucking weird deviations you took this wonderful podcast on when I was away for 2 weeks.
It was an incredibly important thing that was linked to that I don't remember.
Well, it's out there now anyway. Someone want to take this question from Ben Wilmot?
I will.
Go on.
With Big Red sadly having to shut his doors the other week, what was or is your favourite rock bar or club, including ones that have now shut down?
Yeah, we did this a few weeks ago, but obviously since we had that conversation, Big Red went and closed down, which sucks, by the way. As I said before.
I went along on the Friday night where they had a couple of bands on to kind of have a last couple of drinks in there, and then Merlin, you went along the Saturday night, which is the final night, didn't you?
Yeah, I was there for the last night, and it was so busy, but it was a really good evening. Saw a lot of people I haven't seen for a while, which is really nice. But yeah, Big Red's absolute staple of the London scene, now shut down. I saw a big list of venues around London and stuff that have shut in the last 10 years, and it's fucking depressing.
Oh, there's so horrible, many of them, especially around Soho and the Crossrail area.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we said last time we talked about this, obviously Crowbar is probably the most famous and infamous in all the best ways metal bar in London. There's also the Black Heart is still live and kicking, which is great. The Devonshire Arms is great. Garlic and Shots, especially that little basement bit, is great. Outside of London, big fan of Satan's Hollow.
Mine was Gilly's Rock World in Manchester.
Yeah,
it got turned into a Tesco. I
never got to that one.
All my teenage years there. Started going there when I was underage, and they'd kind of know, but they'd let you in. And then I remember like one time I went up to get in and they wouldn't let me in because they said I was too young. So I went around the corner, borrowed my friend's ID, which was a fake one, and like put my hair up and put a cardigan on, and then went back and then they just let me in. So
nice.
No challenge 21 back then. The good old days.
Of course.
I spent like years and years. That was amazing. They had a Friday all-nighter where you could literally just go and just dance to metal all night, and it obviously phased through different bits of music, and it would go into like dance and the Prodigy and hip-hop and stuff. And then there was a Saturday night one, which I think was like till 2 a.m. maybe slightly later. But yeah, we always just used to like go home after school and then go out to the Friday all-nighter, and I usually would like not make it all the way through the night, but I think I might have done a couple of times. And if you made it all the way through the night, then you could make it through the whole all-nighter, and then you could just go out in Manchester the next day and like have some food and go around Affleck Palace and stuff like that.
That is,
yeah,
true. Like, that just sounds like exactly like my experience going up in rock bars, but just in a different place.
Ever. Like, it was literally just a second home. We would just go there all the time and just hang out and just dance, and like that was where I learned about metal, really. That's where I picked up loads of the bands that I liked and loads of songs that I liked, and kind of found this community and what was going on. So I was really, really sad. I mean, I'd moved to London by the time it had closed. So maybe I didn't feel it as acutely, but I did feel it emotionally. I was just really sad about it. And I've not been in the Tesco's because I don't want to. So. But yeah, like now, current ones. I've been to some fun ones while I've been away. I think we've mentioned before the Black Dog in Paris. That's really good.
Yeah, that's
they
great.
Have some food that's all like...
Yeah, it's like a steak restaurant slash metal bar. It's
and
wicked.
You can get like desserts that are like fake eyeballs or like spaghetti dyed like blood red and stuff. You can get like funny like food combinations as well.
Yeah, love that.
Halfords in Berlin is great as well, where we've been. That's more classic.
Halfords
metal
is
and
awesome.
Rock.
Love that giant Rob Halford figure in the middle of the bar.
Super nice staff, and the guy who owns it, who loves Rob Halford, and just super nice guy as well. There's a really good vibe in there.
Yep. I'm just looking at. I've been casually on the side building a, because I'm a massive geek, a Google Maps of all the metal bars I've ever been into.
The first thing I do is
need to do this, and we'll put it on the website for people.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, I've been, of each one.
I got to about 40, which I thought was quite good going.
Yeah, that's
quite a lot worldwide.
The first thing I do when I go to places is go to a metal bar. Not even
of course, not even absolutely
joking.
Essential. Absolutely essential. Yeah, I love. Again, I can't remember which ones I've said already, but in the US and North America, I love Kuma's Corner, which is like a metal kind of burger bar in Chicago, which is fucking awesome. Like the first time I went in there, they were playing Slayer, they're playing Nightmare Before Christmas on the videos, and all their food is named after metal stuff, which is awesome. Absolutely love Fufon's Electrique in Montreal as well. That's an amazing bar. Where did I go the other month? Oh God, the other month I went to the horror bar in Prague, which is probably my favorite bar I've ever been in. Literally metal bar, horror themed. They've got Pinhead and Leatherface and Freddy Krueger, like mannequins all hang out there. The whole thing stretched up really cool. It is me in bar form. It was
that
fucking awesome.
Really cool.
So good. Yeah, if you're in Prague, go to the horror bar. It is awesome.
Oh, there's another place in Paris called the Pigalle Country Club. And it's like a little sort of red gothic pub that's really small and has like the most hideous toilets. But honestly, well,
it's almost a necessity with metal bars. Like a proper metal bar should have minging toilets.
I wouldn't mention them, but like flood levels and like the smoking area is before the toilets, but it's an indoor smoking area. It's probably illegal, but you like go out the back of the bar and then you're trapped in this like smoke hole, and then you go to the toilets and it's like flooded and awful. So that bit's not good, but the actual pub is really cool. It's got like, I think it's got like red walls and it's got like, sort of like a rose on the table, and it's got like some cool like skull type things around, and the bar staff there are really nice as well. Like it's a cool little place to just kind of hang out.
Awesome. I didn't go to that one when I was in Paris, so that's definitely
got to
be added to my list.
Metal bar in Hong Kong as well that have a live house band, and they played Korn's Thoughtless for me, which is really cool. But
that's amazing.
I can't remember the name of it now. I just went over and like I typed it into my phone, and I was a bit drunk, and I was just like, can you play this? Can you play Korn? And they were like, yeah, okay.
That's quality. Right. it should be a quick answer. Kigel Eva Ari asks, is it possible to... What? I tried.
No, I'm laughing at the question. I've just read it.
I thought you were laughing at my, what I thought was quite a good pronunciation.
No, I'm sorry. Go
sorry,
ahead.
Sorry, Kiel. That was horrible, but unintentionally.
I was laughing at
anyway,
the question.
Kiel asks, is it possible to harvest renewable energy from circle pits?
It must be.
That's a really good idea. If you get Devil Driver on, we're going to be fucking lighting this planet up for the next 10 years.
You'd have to like...
We've solved climate change. Maybe? No? Okay.
Maybe that's
too
what we
soon.
Need. Maybe we need a campaign, Pits for Climate Change, and at every share everyone has to wear some kind of device that harnesses the energy from people.
Everyone has to wear solar energy hats while they're moshing off each other. Well, like some kind of kinetic energy. Like
I was going to say, if it's solar, it's only going to work outside. And
well, you're not having circle... Oh, no, of course you're having circle pits indoors. I was literally just thinking of festivals then.
No, it's got to be some kind of...
Yeah, good point.
...other energy type. The energy of... Yeah, you're right. It's kinetic energy. It's the energy of the movement. Oh, yeah, we know science.
We know science. I haven't done it for 15 years.
I think you could harvest renewable energy from circle pits.
You could definitely harvest energy from movement, so
yeah,
why not?
I've got a wind-up torch in the shape of a penguin.
Exactly. So just times that by 500 people and
all over
you've
the world.
Solved climate change. I told you, we're doing it. It starts now. Someone asked this next question.
Which one?
Come on, Alice.
Yeah, which one?
What about the next one?
Oh, I'll do it. Scott Situmple asks,
okay,
what does the future of Creeper look like? I'd like a new record. So this is obviously off the back of the fact that Creeper are doing stuff again.
Well, I don't know what it's going to look like, because they could go creepery and black and purple and do something like, ooh, here's a story about like a missing person or something that's slightly dark. Or maybe they'll come back and just be completely different and they'll be like, oh yeah, now here's a new story, a new concept or a new theme. They do keep people guessing and they put a lot of time and imagination into what they're going to do next.
They do. So they've basically done is they've posted a picture. They're doing a gig anyway. November 1st, Club 229 in London. I've been to that. Is that a new venue?
No.
No. There we go. I'm just out of touch. So they've posted an image with the slogan Fugitives of Heaven. Ooh. So something's happening on November 1st.
That sounds cool, Merlin.
I think it's going to be a My Chemical Romance-esque rebrand where they look different and it's a whole new storyline and there's loads of shit going on.
If it's Fugitives of Heaven, that suggests Fallen Angels, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. That's a cool... it's a fucking cool, like, song title or whatever it is.
Yeah. So maybe there'd be, like, angels who are a bit, like, dirtied up or something. Don't know.
That might be a bit corny for them.
I don't know.
For Creeper.
Even for them.
I can't see them all walking out with big battered angel wings on.
I don't mean they have wings. You just went with wings.
Maybe they... Yeah, they'll just look like
but
something.
But they are theatrical. Wings if they're fallen.
They can. They could just not use the wings. They could just...
They'd be snipped.
No, you could... What if you just tucked the wings snipped. Away? What if you tucked the wings away
Lucifer
into your back?
Had his removed.
Well, yeah. I do like the TV show Lucifer and he does rip off his wings.
That's very good.
But yeah, really interested. I thought the Creeper album was good and, you know, they're very much a band that the UK was fiercely behind. So it'll be interesting to see what they do next.
Imagine if it's angel wings now after you said that.
Well, I will look like an absolute twat. Someone else do this one. I need the last one.
I'll do it. JackSnow95 asks, who do you see at the next wave of headliners? Hang on, let me start there again. Who do you see at the next wave headliners? It doesn't
make
sense.
I think he means
as. Oh.
Oh, I'll do this one as well. Fuck it. Who do you see... Can't get this stuff. Who do you see as the next wave of headliners over the next 5 to 10 years of the large European festivals, including Download, Hellfest, and Wacken?
Can I just say it's hotter than the sun in here?
It's really hot in here. It's freezing in London today, but for some reason this room is basically on fire.
I've got a cold and I'm hotter than sun, so that's my excuse.
It's fine. Go ahead. It's fine. All right, let's put our money where our mouth is. Who could actually be headlining big European festivals then? It's got to, like, we have to have to start having some breakthroughs soon. So what are they
going to
be?
Yeah, because I feel like we just keep going round and round and round and round in circles. All right, well, you mentioned Volbeat earlier. They could maybe do ones, like, at home. Maybe, like, Denmark.
And I'm sure they already headline festivals in Europe. Yeah, they already do places like Raspot.
Yeah. We talk about Ghost all the time. Ghost could definitely
I think Ghost will get a shot at Download.
Yeah.
I genuinely do.
I think so. Oh, if not Hellfest. Other big bands?
As they should, because they're brilliant, by the way.
Other big bands.
I guess we're looking at... people always talk about Parkway Drive.
Yeah.
Do you think Parkway Drive could get a shot?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah?
Definitely. I really want them to, like, come out with another really good album and it's clear where they're going with their show. Like, it's gone more and more and more Rammstein-esque and they're not going to give up on that now they've started it. You can't go back. You open the door, you've got to keep going inside.
No. Yeah, totally agreed. You know, people talk about Architects. I would love to see that happen. I feel like it's a bit less of an obvious run than Ghost and Parkway just because of where all the bands are respectively at.
I'm really curious to see where the next record for them will go as well, because they spoke on the last one about not wanting to repeat themselves with All Our Gods and help me out.
Holy Hell.
No, the other one. The other album.
Oh, Lost Forever, Lost Together.
Yeah, Lost Forever, Lost Together. So, when they did Holy Hell, they were speaking about not repeating what they'd done on the previous two because they felt like they'd sort of gone into the sound which was successful for them, which they're really enjoying, and they wanted to do something slightly different to kind of move things along a bit. I thought that record was good, but I didn't think it was like a massive departure. It didn't make you go like, whoa, what's happened next? So I'm kind of curious to see where they take it next, whether they kind of, how much they stick to their kind of modern Architects sound, or if they kind of really go do a Parkway or something and go, we're just going to completely change it. Like, don't know how I'd feel about that, because I actually really like them. So
are we overlooking Five Finger Death Punch unnecessarily?
Yeah.
because they just do arenas in the UK now. Yeah. They do unbelievable numbers on things like streaming. They are unquestionably the biggest metal band to have broken in the last decade. There's no, like, just unquestionably. So
definitely are very.
Why don't we talk about them more? For, are they just around too much? Do we take them for granted?
Yeah, probably a little bit of that. A little bit of taking them for granted. The fact that they're just...
They've never been, like, anointed, have they? As the kind of the chosen ones.
They're just consistently good. And they just have a consistent audience. And they just come out and they're just solid metal proposition. They got Rob Halford on the songs. And they guest with a bunch of people, haven't they? And yeah, they just kind of come around and do Five Finger and do it well. And then that's it. I don't think they've ever done anything that's really made people go, like, fuck me. What the fuck was that? Like... Parkway having like a spinning drum kit, or like a band
or
releasing
just the,
an album.
The evolution in sound, like pretty much all the bands that have entered this conversation have had a significant shift in sound. Like Bring Me had it, Ghost have had it, Parkway have had it, obviously. So maybe we're just kind of, I don't know. Maybe they'll come out with a mad album that just like completely takes us all by surprise musically.
But they are still growing, like album on album, even though they obviously do have their sound, they're still growing. But yeah, I just maybe like the wider world, in inverted commas, has not taken as much notice because they've not done anything insane. Like that's all I can think because yeah, they definitely would have a shot at it for sure.
Yeah, why the hell not? Do we think that Bring Me the Horizon's time as being a potential download headliner is kind of gone now?
Unless they go back to metal, I think it's hard to sell that.
Not because they're not big enough at all. But
download, they could be. They don't have to be super metal. They're still like a rock band.
Yeah.
Even if it's, you know.
I don't know.
It's really like, interesting because people seem to not really talk about them anymore. Whereas on Sempiterna, it was like, this is happening. They're going to do download at some point. But now I feel like we might see them at Reading before we see them
download. I think
it's
more because they've moved sideways, not in terms of popularity, but in terms of the events they're playing. Like we talked about them setting up All Point East, like, well, curating All Points East, like the day they're on and, you know, done Reading and Leeds. And that seems to be the focus more than the metal festivals. So maybe it's just kind of that shift as... You don't hear people in metal talking about them as much. But yeah, they're obviously still massive and they put on a really amazing show. But yeah, I don't know what they want or what their direction is. Mm. Not in their minds. So I really love the show they did at the Royal Albert Hall. I thought that was amazing.
Could we see like a joint one at Download? Like when, I can't remember if these are the exact bands that did it, but they, I think like Paramore and Queens of the Stone Age joint headlined the day at Reading once.
Yeah.
Could we see Ghost and Five Finger Death Punch share or Ghost and Parkway, et cetera, et cetera? That could be quite interesting.
Yeah, it could be. Download hasn't gone down that road, so.
I mean, we don't want to make it too Download-based, obviously, but obviously that is, for English people, that is the kind of de facto conversation point when you talk about festival headliners.
I don't know. I just feel like we keep talking about them, but you just kind of have to wait and see because we can talk about it all we want, but it's not going to change anything.
Yeah, and we have to wait for it to, you know, we have to give them a bit more time. There's a game plan for these things, so, you know.
A game plan that we don't know.
Absolutely no doubt that when it seems realistically viable for these bands to make the step up, then it will happen.
I'd be happy with any of those options, to be fair. So.
Yeah, definitely. Right, that's it for this week. Thank you very much for tuning in, everybody. I'm going off to watch Orange Goblin cover Motorhead songs tonight. That's exciting.
I'm not excited because I was meant to go, but I feel too ill and I'm bailing out. Yeah.
Well, I will tell you all about it.
I'm gonna go home and watch
week.
The Gilmore Girls.
That's metal in its own way, I guess.
Sebastian Bach's in it.
Who's the most is he?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, he's in the band. Because they have a band, yeah. There's loads of references
don't
to metal.
Say that like
it.
I know what that
there's
means.
A,
oh yeah, the Gilmore Girls have a band.
To rock
what?
And metal
I just
it,
started
loads.
Watching it on Netflix because it was suggested to me once, and I felt really guilty about it. But actually, it's got a ton of pop culture references in. They talk. There's like a
constant.
Yeah, there's like a woman who talks. She's like a rich woman, and she talks about renting a house out to corn and how they like kept the front garden nice. And then Sebastian Bach's in it, and he runs a sandwich shop, and he's also the guitarist of the band.
What then, band?
Lorelai's favorite band is Metallica.
Yeah, and then also
there's loads of good music played on the stereo as well.
Yeah, and also they said
why have we not done an article on this? Seriously,
that's a really
all
good
of the band,
all the metal references in the Gilmore
metal
Girls.
References.
Do it now before someone else.
All right.
And I've been watching it like avidly for the last few weeks. And also, there's a really funny bit. I was watching it yesterday, and somebody said they were staying out. No, they were going out late, and they were going to like find a man. Basically, she like wanted to find someone to sleep with, and her flatmate Rory, she was like, "Where are you going at this hour? What man are you going to find? Like Spike and Drusilla?" And I was like, this is amazing.
Spike and Drusilla.
Yeah, because it was a Buffy reference.
The hell.
It was so good.
There's so many good references.
Also, when like the main character, oh, Lorelai,
the t-shirts that like. That Jess wears as well. I can't remember what t-shirts
he wears. Metal t-shirts, and he has to take them off to work in the diner.
Can I just tell you something? Can I just tell you something?
What?
So I've just, about halfway through you two describing this, I've only just realised that you weren't talking about what I thought was the Golden Girls. Which is why I got really fucking confused. I don't know what the Gilmore Girls is at all. I thought you were talking about that thing about the four old ladies who hang out. So no, I'm like, they talk about corn in the Golden Girls. Well, what I thought was the Gilmore Girls.
They probably named it after the Golden Girls. Like,
I had no
idea.
Maybe.
I've never seen it though.
I got really excited then. I was like, I never knew this. Sebastian Bach is in this thing with these old ladies that like all hang out with each other. Why is he in it? They talk about corn and Drusilla and Buffy. I thought it was from the 80s.
I was really surprised when Sebastian Bach showed up because I just thought, I felt like a bit like, not guilty pleasure. Well, yeah, guilty pleasure about watching it because I was like, this is really sad and I shouldn't be watching it, but then that was really out of the blue. I was like, what is going on here?
Oh yeah, I recognize this show now. I'm googling it. I remember Family Guy took the piss out of it ages ago.
Yeah, really, really fast talking.
Yeah, that's what Family Guy did.
Like them. I think they just went into like total rubbish.
I'm so gutted that it wasn't Golden Girls. That's what I've been thinking about this whole time.
Well, that would be fun.
Never mind.
Anyway,
but you should still do that piece I just
suggested.
Yeah, that'd
be cool.
But yeah, please take lots of pictures and tell us what the Motorhead event was like, because I really want to go and I can't because I'll just...
It does sound pretty cool.
I'll kill everybody.
We'll
so.
Do. But there's some big re-releases of their 1979 banging albums, Overkill and Bomber, which are two fucking great albums. Bomber turns 40 years old this month and it still goes so hard. My goodness me. Anyway, that's all for next week. We'll be back then. See you later. Actually, I won't be back then because I'm off. I've just realised. Sorry.
Are you?
Yeah, I'm working from home next week.
So is it just me?
Dog sitting, aren't I?
Just me. So,
see if you can get the old Celts in. Or you just get Elle talking into a mic. Who knows? Find out next week. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.